Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
podcasts while driving, cool school experiments. These are school experiments which open up the window to the quantum world and the electronics world using some of the more modern technology I think that we have available to us at this point in time. So, one of the things that... I was really itching myself. So I'm driving home at this point in time and working here. So I'll stop talking from time to time while I do the all-important thing of looking at the traffic. Yes, first job, survival. Second job, education. Now, this is a bit of a crumbs here because this is... Whatever's happening, this is... It's traffic jam time. Let's see. Come on, mate. We're coming through. Okay, so there's a series of school experiments which are close but boring. And if you dig down into science, you pick up some of these really fascinating experiments. Now, the first one I want to talk about is the Thomson effect. Thomson, who later was called Lord Kelvin. Bit of a dark horse as far as I'm concerned. Someone who's very much liked because he's English, but he's got some funny views at the end of his all said and done. That's Lord Kelvin. You're going to hear the air conditioner. I don't want to turn the air conditioner up too loud, so it's hurting your ears. Okay, so in this one, I have a copper rod about 5 millimeters diameter, I think. I think that's then because you put heat in, you want a reasonable heat gradient. If it's too thick, you get no heat gradient. The whole thing heats up, and you may even want to cool down the ends. That might be an interesting thing to get a really good heat gradient. You'll put at least heat fins on the end. Now, what you do is you put a Bunsen burner in the centre and set some metal along, a Bunsen burner at 50 centimetres, and hook it up to a circuit. And what you do is you drive an amp, 3 amps through it, and you measure the temperature at various points along this copper wire. Now, that's got to be done reliably. So what I think you really do need to measure reliable temperature is have a some sort of clamp device which sort of clamps it in a known way. Sort of hand which goes over it. It's non-conducting, but it's nice and soft, holds it, and pushes the thermometer end to the edge there. Now, given the sort of temperatures you want to read and the accuracy you want to read, I think you can have thermocouple. That's a difficult thermocouples to move along. It'd be ideal for a distributed temperature sensor, like an optical fiber temperature sensor, but you ideally want to use something that a kid can calibrate. And one of the things that happens is that as you run a current through it, heat gets taken upstream and deposited downstream of the flame. And this is the Selbic effect, the thermocouple effect, really an entree onto... just looking across here, just getting into the good lane here. So this is a sort of an entree into a whole lot of solid-state quantum mechanics thing. And it's sort of, it's something which really, like, you can take so much away. You put in heat, it heats up. You put in heat, it travels along the bar. You put a current through it, it moves heat from upstream to downstream, and you've got different components to measure it with. There's so much interest here, and the effect is how hot you heat it and all this type of stuff. Now, there's all these things I can really imagine to get this more under control. What I really would like is in the centre, you click over a little can with a gauze underneath it, so the gauze catches the hot gas going up, and it's sort of like a insulating can, but it's hot on the inside, so it concentrates the heat on your piece of fibre. You can use a bolometer, temperature. There's all these things you can do. So that's one experiment, and I think that's a one to go. Then obviously what's happening is that while I'm doing these goddamn awful rehab exercises, you just think, oh, I could do this, could do that. Another thing, so that's an experimental setup. Bunsen burner, thermometer, power source, quantum physics, end of story. Why don't you do it? Well, I think we've got to work out at the university to do it and show up. Then the next one is a power supply, coil of wire, a weight on an optical fibre. I think it's got to be an optical fibre. There's nothing quite like it in terms of there's nothing quite like it in terms of torsion and the amount of strength of optical fibre for the torsion coefficient. That's a really, really good use. A oil bath, which goes up to quieten it down, and then the oil bath goes down and releases it. It seems a good thing, a torsion's pendulum. And say a camera, a webcam, so this is built up, and you just, another thing I suppose you could do is variable frequency, computer lab view onto your power supply, variable frequency, and after a certain amount of time, the field strength has to be just sufficient to flick it, and that's about it. So you want to flick or change the magnetization of your iron bar or ferrite or whatever you're using, and get that to oscillate from side to side. And this, it's harder for people to pick up what's going on, but this is something showing a flipping of angular momentum. And I really think that kids should have jaw harps, and I also think that you should have take-home kits of a gyroscope would be fantastic, bloody fantastic to have. But this is the sort of quantum world approach, I think, across. So we've got Einstein's pendulum, the Thompson effect. Now, Michelson's oil drop has just got so much for it, and I think oil drops really don't do it for me. The fundamental thing is that its diameter of an oil drop is undefined. An oil drop isn't an oil drop. Now, eventually it winds up somewhere. And you've got the whole thing of ionizing it. So let's go what the oil drop experiment is. You have an oil drop and you drop it through the air, and it's held in an air column, so it goes up, up and down in the air column. Now, my head is trying to think. I sort of feel confident that you could use the idea of a charged electrode to actually steer it into the centre of your view as well. Yeah, like you can use X. So you've got this microscope dropping down. Now, of course, a microscope is very hard to do. It's got a depth of field problem, and I've dealt with this in industry. So what you do is you get a laser, you rip off the lens, and you've got then for a point source Oh, thank you very much. You're a point source of coherent light. And now with that point source of coherent light, you then put your particle in front of it. And that particle in front of it will drop down and illuminate. Sorry, what did you say? It will show you, it will cast a shadow, a beautiful diffraction shadow. Now, the beautiful thing of the diffraction shadow is that it's full of high precision information. You can get the actual curvature, the quality, surface quality will be the number of rings that you can see out. The more spherical it is, perfectly spherical, the more rings you can count out. You've got to look at a diffraction pattern as something which gives you just grades and grades and grades of information. And so you project that onto a camera lens, not a camera, a CCD array from a camera. And the older ones, which are larger areas, are good. You're going to project it onto a screen to look at them. And so this is your very cheap dust particle camera. Now, what we can do nowadays is this pretty unique thing. We can actually remove a lot of the experimental skill involved in this type of stuff, especially if the particle occurs in this camera system. You can lock loop it and get the computer to adjust the field and adjust its position to hold it there. I was thinking that there might be other other ways of doing it. So you've got this particle. Now, I must admit, oil, it's a way of producing a little drop. Yeah, stuff like that. What really strikes me is... you doing that is nanospheres. We can actually make some very nice uniform nanoparticles, the nanospheres, and you basically nowadays order any size droplet you want as a powder. I don't know how this should go, so I should check I'm not going above the speed limit. Here it must be school time already. What is it? 2:54. Bloody hell. Okay. So I'm just going through a school zone on the way home. So let's summarise so far. We've done Thompson's wacky piece of wire, wacky wire. I think that's beautiful. And then we've got Einstein's ticky tock, and this is Milken's balls, and we can actually lift the balls off a plate. Now, shoes or something here. Bloody hell. Having this thing through. That's an ambo going through. Yeah, so you've got your little ball and you've got to suspend it in space. Now, the issue is how do you, you've got these balls, how do you actually get an iron? How do you pull it up to a space and how do you control the amount of ions on that ball? So how many the electrons on the ball? Now, what strikes me is that there's a whole lot of electric field parameters which we're not playing with. We don't play with the left and left, right, back and forward to actually pull it into the correct position. We are not playing with the fact that we could actually perhaps coat these balls with a metal or use some sort of UV light to photoionize it, a flash, the UV photo, the UV laser to hit it. Get these balls and ionize it. That'd be pretty fascinating stuff to do. And then once we've got it, one of the things I think is that I sort of imagine that you can inject ions into this thing. So you've ionized its negative, you can actually put in negative electrode ions there that go in, or positive ions. I don't know if you add it, you add an extra electron. I really can't remember whether you actually remove an electron or add an electron. I think it's you remove an electron from. But there are all these things that I think you could do in a fairly nice school kit. Milken's oil drop experiment. Firstly, you've got to take away the microscope, because that's occupational health and safety. Other kids will like it. The school's not going to have a microscope. There's a sort of lovely little kit that you can set up. And then you want to be able to use, once you've got a particle up, use your electric field, sideways electric field, to actually move your particle. Particle through it. There's so many things you could do. I just think you could have a rotating electric field and actually get that particle to inscribe a circle. Whoops. And the size of the circle could tell you something about the mass of the ball and the viscosity of the liquid. Rather than actually, you also worry you're using gravity effects there. So this is, you get a plate fore, aft, and sidewards. A grill, if you really want. Fore, aft, and sidewards. That allows you to do it. You could actually have this hermetically sealed. Whoops. Whoa. Come on. So just merging here as Truck City. It's Sydney's buildies. This is a roadworks here. What's going up is there's a population explosion. They're increasing dam sizes, flooding bushland, doing everything. And then the government, when everyone's upset, they say, oh, we're going to stop the number of people coming into Australia. We're going to limit it. Unlikely story. Okay, just watching this. Yeah, so I can imagine a Millikan oil drop experiment is a definite thing to go. Another sort of experiment which I think is worthwhile doing is Kelvin's lightning experiment. The Milken's oil drop experiment. The Thompson's Wacky Wire requires precision temperature reading. And what I like about that is that as you turn up the voltage, you should change the temperature ever so much. And there's a bit of measurement there. And the Milken's thing is that you've got this very, very physical thing of using electric fields to steer a charge. It's something that computer simulations just can't get onto. And you've got gravity force, electric force, it's something really to build up. Now, is it Kelvin's thunderstorm, lightning storm? It's basically two cans with holes in them, right? And the cans drop into other four cans all up. Two cans up the top, there's two cans at the top, and they've got water in them. And what happens is you punch a hole in both of them, in the two top ones, the water drips out, pours out quickly. And they're aligned. So the charge buildup on one leads to charge which limits the charge on the other, and eventually these things build up electricity and lightning strikes between the two. So this is like two cans, four cans connected by two wires, and what's so intense is that you don't expect it. Kids normally they're used to playing with cans, water in the sand pit and stuff like that. There's no expected. And it comes up, and then you see these fantastic things that as water drips out of the two cans, it slows up for a while. It's actually quite easy experiment. It slows up for a while, and it as the charge builds up, there's a Coulombic attraction of the water, so the water rate drops as it comes. It takes. You can hear the water drop and change, and as it drops and change, and it's struggling across it, the lightning strikes, bang, and it goes drip, 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 and it slows down again. The charges build up, and then the spark is gone. It's something incredibly fascinating about. So that's Lister so far. Thompson wacky wire, Einstein's watch, Milken's pith ball apparatus measuring the electron. I think it's Kelvin's firestorm. The word rally goes in there. There's some point. It's trying to actually really nail some down, some pretty exciting and weird experiments to try and get out. There's lots of phenomenal things to get out there. It's just where the actual kids see them. Another experiment to add to this is exponential decay of rice bubbles. For this, you need a mobile phone and some rice bubbles, and you just have the mobile phone in a quiet room. You get your rice bubbles, you pour in the milk, and it starts crackling. Now, what actually happens is that you get this picked up on the mobile phone, the surface is a file, you dump the file into Audacity, and you count the number of crackles per unit time at 1 second, 10 seconds. So far, so forth, and you graph it out. This is basically a method of showing a decay. Another experiment is the making of a sperm or egg. Now, for this, I don't have much time to explain it, but for this, you make up a male, your mum's chromosome and your dad's chromosome, which is just getting some Play-Doh and rolling it into a sausage, a very long sausage, and you start to cut up the sausage and explain that it's actually a sausage 2 meters long, but you're cutting up small lengths of them. And step one is you've got your mum and dad. That's actually inside. Your mum and dad are inside you. Then you take your sausage and you duplicate your sausage. So you'll have two mums, two dads, and you pinch them together at their central point, I forgot what it's called, and to make your chromosome that everyone recognises. Now that chromosome, that X-shaped thing, is at the point of doubling, and at the point of doubling, everything is coiled up, and it's a sort of characteristic thing. Then when you get your mum and your dad, your blue and your pink, together, you lay them on top of each other, and you get your knife, and you cut in at various points in terms of the four parts, the links, X, Y, Z, and then you interchange it, and so what happens is that it starts off blue, goes pink, and then goes blue again, and then the opposite way, it gets pink, blue, pink, and that's random. And when you've done this, you have two X's, but they're hybrid X and Y, they're sort of like a mix of X and Y. Then when you get them out, you then unplug them again, so you get gametes, if you think what they are, they're the sperm and egg cells. So from one cell division, you actually make four sperm and egg cells with two matching pairs of opposites. Now they're geometrically opposite, where the man, where the mum is in one, the dad's in the other, and vice versa all the way through, through one selection, and then you've got another two, which are separated again. This is from your left and your right hand, hands of your ex. So you've got four of them, and the four of those are four mixes of your mum and dad. So when you produce your egg or your sperm, you've got your mum and your dad, and your mum and dad are then mixed together and spliced to give you sort of like ritual shuffling of your mum and your dad, shuffled deck. So it's like the two decks are mixed, so the decks are doubled. So all up, you've got two decks. You double the two decks, that gives you four decks all in all. And those four decks are arranged such they have cards from each. So you could really do something with, say, a playing deck of cards. You could have red cards for the mum, and red suits for the mum, and black suits for dad. And you have it such that you start off with the hearts. It doubles to make the diamonds for the mum, and same is similar there. And then you go up and you cut about the same thing and make up a composite deck of diamonds and clubs and spades and hearts. Get stack the decks, and then you've got four. Your deck of, what's it, 52 cards, is it? Yeah, 52 cards is 13 sub-decks of mixed red and black suits. That's one way of doing it with cards. So I'm coming to the end of my journey here as I describe fun things to do with at school, which I think are a bit more instructive. Thanks for listening.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.